Good evening, BHB family. This is Coach Coop here with another episode of BHB Radio. Tonight, I am joined by my good friend, Keith Norris. Keith is actually the owner and co-founder of Paleo FX, a conference that combines everything from ancestral health and wellness to fitness to new ways of thinking about things like supplements, different types of diets, including ketogenic diets. Keith and his wife Michelle just released a book called Primal Uprising, and it basically, which he is going to help us do tonight, lays out all these simple things that you guys can do in order to just go from where you're at to reaching your goals and doing so in a way that's sustainable, right? So more specifically, we're going to talk about Keith's approach to things like training, nutrition, supplementation, and how you guys can actually find lasting success with all of those things. Without further ado, let's welcome Keith to the show. Good evening, everyone. This is Coach Matt, and you are listening to Better Health and Body Radio, your source for the latest and greatest information and understanding in the world of health, nutrition, and performance, where we give you a seat at the table next to the best and the brightest minds to arm you with the information you need to optimize yourself. Join us for another exciting, thought-provoking episode of BHB Radio, starting now. All right, Keith, thank you so much for coming on the show, brother. I appreciate it.
Matt, anytime, bro, anytime. To have a discussion with you, hell yeah.
Well, it's been a while, so, you know, selfishly, I always look forward to excuses for us to get to connect, and this is one of them. But for people at home who might not be as familiar with you or Paleo FX, can you introduce yourself and your work a little bit?
Yeah, so my name is Keith Norris. I am the co-founder, along with my lovely wife, Michelle, of Paleo FX. And for people who don't know, Paleo FX is the largest of its kind in the world. Paleo leaning event, and paleo, not just the diet, but lifestyle, and lifestyle would include everything from, yes, a paleo leaning diet, but also, you know, the environment, your relationships, the tribe that you operate in, your mental health, your spiritual health, your physical health, yes, and your financial health too. So this conference really covers all things, and it did start as a paleo, you know, kind of like a CrossFit, bacon, butter and coffee, you know, type of tribe, coming together, because those were the early adopters of paleo. And I was too, right. And I kind of came through that pipeline as well. But it really expanded, and it expanded as Michelle and I expanded. And as we began to associate with people who were experts in these other realms, Paul Check is a great example. Mm-hmm. For your listeners who might know who Paul Check is. So there's a very spiritual side to Paul Check, as well as being a very, very knowledgeable, physical, in knowing the human body in all aspects, both physically and spiritually. So yeah. And along with that, Michelle and I just wrote a book recently that is Primal Uprising, and that is kind of the new direction of Paleo FX. And that includes what we see as the seven pillars of what optimizes a human being. And those pillars would be physical, mental, emotional, financial, spiritual, relational, and tribal, or community, if you want to look at it that way. So yeah
that's awesome. Yeah, actually I was going to get to that, but since you hit on it first, let's start there. What
totally
is the book? So it's called Primal Uprising, for people who haven't checked it out, and I can attest, as someone who's been to Paleo FX, the conference, who has followed the content and education and the value that Keith and Michelle put out for a while, it is second to none. I highly suggest you guys go on and you know, give it a look. They've got a ton of free content, things to just help people from literally all walks of life. But what's the overarching gist of the book? You know, what made you guys want to put that out there?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the subtitle, and that will help explain. So it's the title of the book is Primal Uprising, as you said, and the subtitle is The PaleoFX Guide to Optimizing Your Health, Expanding Your Mind, and Reclaiming Your Freedom. So over the last, in this book, by the way, the genesis of it came about 5 years ago. And Michelle and I had this idea, and we kind of worked on it. And the basic idea was, the more and more people that we worked with, both personally, because we are coaches as well, people we worked with personally and in a larger sense, we saw that most of these people's issues were problems of their own making. Right. So we came to see that, you know, people live in a human zoo, and it's a zoo for the most part comprised of their own making. And that and the biggest thing that we saw 5 years ago, one of the biggest things we were hitting on was critical thought. Right. Don't just follow an expert because this person has claimed or been deemed an expert. Or, you know, the whole idea of the 60s mantra of question authority. You know, just because somebody's an authority, quote unquote authority, does that make them a ruler of your own life? Or should you turn the focus in and find out if that makes sense to you? Does that pass the smell test?
Right.
And so that was the genesis of the book 5 years ago. And we wrote up a proposal and shopped it around and, you know, did the normal route, got shot down by everybody that by the publishing industry. We thought about self-publishing and kind of was like, well, you know, anyway, enter the COVID pandemic, and all of a sudden publishers were very, very interested in this concept. So, you know, I tell people, although the whole COVID thing put the brakes on PaleoFX for 2 years. It's just like every other event out there. It did give us an opportunity to publish a book that we have wanted to see in print for the longest period of time.
Right. Literally like an example of what you think is initially hardship and it very well might've been in some ways, but ultimately yielding something better. Right.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. It's been a really a life lesson for us. And it's been a huge life lesson for me to, I would have considered myself 2 years ago, or, you know, maybe even 3 or 4 years ago, to be the ultimate control freak. And I had to give all that up. I mean, it's been a series of life events that has demonstrated to me that I don't have control over anything.
No.
The only thing I do have control over is my response.
Right.
Right. That is one thing I do have mastery of. And this is a very Bruce Lee principle too. Give up control and master response. And that is your true dominion. And that is true empowerment. And empowerment leads to true freedom. And that's a big step. And that's a huge part of breaking free of the zoo is reclaiming that aspect.
Yes. And the letting go that comes with that also actually, you know, when you kind of learn to ride with it for a while, it's sort of like trusting yourself on the surfboard after kind of being super stiff and shaky and then holding your breath tight and not breathing. I think, you know, when you learn to accept what you can't control and let go a bit, and then also see yourself getting taken care of a few times, maybe hitting a couple branches on the way down. But what you end up doing is, you know, your heart unclenches and I think you get more in alignment, which I think not, you know, improves your health, but also kind of helps you attract the life you want to attract.
Yeah, totally. And I love the surfing metaphor. So a little bit more about me. I lived in North Carolina for a long period of time, and I actually worked for the evil empire. I actually worked for Big Pharma.
I was going to ask when we were going to get to that, your days with Big Pharma that then led you to natural health.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I came out of the military and I had looking back on it, very lucky. Had a friend who was in human resources, and she in this pharmaceutical company. It was Burroughs Wellcome at the time. Burroughs Wellcome doesn't exist because that company was absorbed by Glaxo, and, you know, just a string of absorptions and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, Burroughs Wellcome was the company I went to work for out of the gate. And I really, this particular job was in coastal North Carolina, and I really had no intent to live at coastal North Carolina. My intent was to come back to South Texas. and in particularly Austin. And I had no desire to stay in North Carolina. At the time I got out of the military, Texas was in the middle of a recession, an oil recession. And the economy at that time was driven by oil. And at that time it was, Saudis were pumping out over an overabundance of oil, which shut down the production in Texas and yada yada. Anyway, it was just a bad economic time in Texas. So I thought twice about that, and I thought, well, I can sit here and be broke. And I had a family at the time too. I had a wife and two kids, and I was like, or I can pack up and we can go to North Carolina, and I can have. And let me tell you, pharmaceuticals at that time was a gold mine. There was a lot of money to be had in pharmaceuticals at that time.
I think it's still a gold mine.
It's still growing. So anyway, I went up to North Carolina, went to work for Big Pharma. My position at Big Pharma was essentially a liaison between the pharmaceutical manufacturer and the FDA. So by, you know, the FDA is supposed to come in, inspect these plants, and make sure that the plants are manufacturing their products on the up and up. That they don't have any shortcuts and everything's safe. The first dose coming down the line is just as strong and effective as the last dose coming down the line. All the cleaning procedures for all of the equipment that's used to manufacture, there's no cross-contamination, all of these things. The FDA does not lay out what exactly needs to be done. They leave that to the manufacturers, but it's up to the manufacturer to prove to the FDA that what they are doing is on the up and up. And let me tell you, the manufacturers want to cut corners, right? Because that's profits. You start adding, you know, too many steps to the process, that's too much money. And so the manufacturer is under tremendous pressure to cut corners. And the FDA is there supposedly to ensure that doesn't happen. Well, as I rose further up the ranks, there was a couple things. I realized this was all a big freaking shell game. That the FDA did not want to give sanctions to any manufacturer, because that would give the industry as a whole a black eye. And there are too much money to be made in pharmaceuticals for that to happen. So there was that part of it. And then on the manufacturer's side, I happened to work at this time when I kind of finally woke up to things for a company that produced mostly diabetes-related pharmaceuticals and equipment. And I can still remember it. I went into one particular meeting, and the topic of that meeting was the expected rise in diabetes cases in the US over the next 10 years. And the feeling in that room was giddy. And I thought, I cannot do this anymore.
Wow.
I cannot. And I was seeing where R&D money was going. And let me tell you, there was no R&D money going to the next, the next kind of cure, or looking for a cure for diabetes. It was all about maintenance.
Right.
Nobody wanted to cure that disease. It was maintenance, cradle to grave maintenance. We get a diabetic at 16, take them to 90. That is profitable.
Right.
Curing anything is not profitable at all. So anyway, there is that. But the whole reason I wanted to go there was the surfing metaphor, to circle back around to your surfing metaphor. I surfed quite a bit when I was in coastal North Carolina. That was a big boon that I did not realize was there. But once I got there, I'd never surfed before. I learned to surf and became very, very good. I was addicted to it. I loved it.
I didn't know that about you. Here I am learning
totally.
New stuff too, just like everybody else.
Yeah. But I surfed quite a bit. And the beautiful thing about North Carolina was we had access to great surf on the Outer Banks, and within 4 hours we could be mountain biking in the mountains. So it was a beautiful place to live, and I'm glad that all that came together from that part. But anyway, some of the old time surfers, we'd be out there, and you know, sometimes you'd go out and the breaks wouldn't be that great, but the old timers were always out there. It didn't matter if surf was great. Obviously they'd be out there, but the surf could be piss poor and they'd still be out there. And you know, you'd talk to them and they'd say, you know, a real surfer surfs what nature gives them and loves every bit of it. You know, a poser surfer waits for the quote unquote right conditions. And to me, that was the difference in trying to control a situation and responding to a situation.
Hmm.
We we'd see the old timers out there on puddle waves and having a blast, having a hoot. And you kind of look at them and go, what the hell are they doing? But now, you know, I got it. I was like, you're right. You know, you could pack it in and go home and, you know, whatever, smoke dope and bitch about the shitty surf, or you can go out and have a blast. It's how you respond. How are you going to respond right to the situation? So, yeah.
Oh, very. Yeah. I love that. I love that. I'm like taking notes just because, like, sometimes it's like, it's just good to hear things that you've heard before and in different ways.
Oh,
and
yeah,
ways that you kind of, you know, resonate with you and you almost feel it in your body. I think that's how we kind of truly learn. Like, you can logically understand something, but then when you kind of learn it at a time when your growth is such that you're ready to take it in, that, and then you physically feel it in your body when you hear that truth spoken mm-hmm. again, I think that's when we really understand, not just know.
Right. So, and that is a huge difference between knowing, I'm pointing to my head that you can't see, knowing and knowing now hand drops to the sacral area of your stomach. I mean,
right,
there is a vast difference between the two, and knowing the hand drop to the sacral is, that's an unmistakable truth when you know it at that point. And yeah, sometimes you have to hear the same thing a few different times. You have to hear it from a few different people, and it eventually will resonate. If it's a truth, it will resonate with you at the right time.
Totally. And it's funny how life sends us, you know, people, signs, like things like that, synchronicities that usually, if you are meant to learn and understand this thing or be in this situation or connect with this person, you end up seeing it more than once. So I do believe in that. So I want to, speaking of going from pharma exec to natural health, I want to transition to natural health here in a sec. But before I do that, I do want to say one last thing and tie a bow on a couple of good points you made regarding looking for band-aids, not cures. I think people, you know, most people are kind of hip to the idea these days that pharma is a lot, you know, they do operate on a more of a subscription-based business model. As you said, with the FDA, like a lot of different places, not just unique to pharma, but, you know, the environmental, protection agency, the EPA, like these places are actually in large part funded by the companies they're supposed to be regulating. So there's that hand that feeds mentality there. And I think that what people don't really realize, like you said, is like with regards to cures, is that pharma actually is very capable and has come out with some amazing drugs, such as, you know, low dose naltrexone, for example, but, you know, methylene blue, but these things, you know, there's not as much money to be made in them because they also help keep people well. So they don't always get, out there, or if they do, they just don't get the same amount of love and whatnot. But transitioning more to natural health, obviously the last thing, the biopolitics, could be a podcast unto itself. How are you eating these days? Because last time we connected, you were eating an ancestral diet. There was no dogma attached to it, but you're eating mostly I call it a neo-Mediterranean, to use Art Devaney's word, or like an ancestral diet. You were experimenting with almost like a cyclic keto. How are you eating these days? I think people having an example of what to do for themselves could help for framework.
Sure. Yeah, totally. So I will preface this by saying I am very lucky in the sense that I am one of those who could probably get away with eating whatever. And because I work out so much and I do that, and just genetically, I have never really been negatively affected by my food intake or, you know, what I ate. I am naturally not an overeater, so that was never a problem. But to circle back, there was a point in my life where I had, and I still do, it's under control, had essential hypertension. So essential hypertension, for people who don't know, is elevated blood pressure for no known cause. And no known cause for me at the time, this was about 20 years ago, was okay. At that time, salt was considered maybe a contributor to high blood pressure. And so I went through periods where I really, really reduced my salt intake, no change in blood pressure. I mean, we tried everything, stress reduction. I'm probably about the most chill dude you will ever come across, but I was like, okay, well, I'll try to even reduce my stress even more. No change. Coffee, you know, the doctors are reaching by this point. They're like, I don't know. Do you drink? I'm like, no, don't drink. You know, I have a, you know, I'll have a whiskey or two every now and again, but not consistently. They're like, well, what is one thing that you do consistently that, you know, just we're shotgunning here. And I said, well, you know, I drink coffee on the daily and a lot of it. Bingo. Yeah, they said, let's cut back on coffee. Well, being the type of dude I am, I didn't just cut back. I went freaking cold turkey, which was a little rough for a while, but I did it. and no change. So the doctors were confounded. They're like, well, I don't know. And, you know, if this continues, we'll monitor it. But if it continues, then, you know, you really ought to consider going on, a medication, which I was like, oh, hell no. I work for Big Pharma. I am not going on any medications. I just, you know, for me personally, having lived my entire life, being healthy by means outside of any kind of pharmaceutical intervention. And I will say too, I wasn't anti-steroid. I was anti-steroid for me. Mm-hmm. So I was totally down with people, you know, hey, if you want to do that to increase your performance, I'm totally down with it. I'm not judgmental. I'm just not going to do it.
Right.
It just wasn't my thing and I wasn't going to go there. So cool. So anyway, that is how, even though I was very, very driven to excel in sports, that was a no-go for me. Like, if I can't compete on my own with my natural abilities, then I probably don't need to be competing at whatever level. So that was kind of my mindset at the time. So you take that into, hey, you're going to have to go on, you know, high blood pressure medication. I was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. So that led me to start, and this was the early days of the internet, to start poking around on the internet and, you know, just kind of see what's out there and some alternative methods. And I was kind of looking, you know, at, you know, kind of the hippie, vegetarian bent. I wasn't vegetarian, but I was like, maybe they got something with the superfoods. I don't know. You know, I was looking around. Anyway, long story short, I ran into Art Devaney online, started reading some of Art Devaney stuff. Shortly thereafter, I ran into this kook named Rob Wolf and started, you know, chatting with him, and this was the early days of gluten intolerance and, you know, kind of the ancestral diet and the paleo diet and this, that, and the other. And I was curious, but unconvinced. But they, you know, were discussing all of these maladies that they claimed were attributed to gluten intolerance. And I was like, huh, well, that's interesting. I wonder if I were to cut gluten out of my diet, I wonder if that would affect my blood pressure. And so I did. I just did a test on myself. I had to learn what gluten was in. Oh crap, it's in just about everything. It's a refined carbohydrate. So I, you know, I just went through and did the work and eliminated everything, which was kind of a shock to my wife, Michelle, because she at the time was an Italian chef. Homemade pastas, homemade everything Italian. I mean, that was her forte. So, you know, she's like, I don't know about you and your online friends. Seems kind of crazy that you give all this up, but
you're mixing with the wrong crowd, man.
It's hilarious to look back at that now. But anyway, she was like, yeah, you know, you go ahead and do this thing with your online friends, bunch of kooks, whatever. So anyway, I did it
on the internet.
it's so hilarious. We crack up about that so much now. So anyway, I cut this out, and at the time I was giving blood every, I think it was like 56 days or something was a time limit. Anyway, the blood mobile would come out to work, and, you know, it was super easy. So every 56, whatever days it was, I would go to give blood. Every time before you give blood, they take your blood pressure. And every time I get the talk, sir, did you realize your blood pressure is elevated? Yep. You know, totally got it. Totally down with it. Working on it. Yada, yada, yada. Well, I went in, and this was after maybe 2 weeks, three at the most of following this. At that time, it was a very, very, the only carb I was essentially eating I was essentially eating the meat, veggies, and nuts diet at that point, because I didn't have a whole lot of other options. So that's what I was doing and had been doing that for about 3 weeks. So I go in and the phlebotomist, you know, same thing, takes my blood pressure. And then she rolls on with what she's doing. And I said, just curious, how was my blood pressure? She goes, oh, it's fine, hon. It's like, you know, 120 over seven or whatever. And I was like, would you mind checking in again? Because I'm having some, been having some issues just to make sure. She did, same thing. And I was like, well, isn't that curious? So I cut out gluten, right? This is an N equals one. But for me, cutting out gluten, and I had no other that I could tell side effects from it. I mean, I felt great. I had no reason to believe my gut permeability was being hampered. Nothing. The only thing was this essential hypertension. And once I cut out gluten, it went away. And I thought, maybe there is something here. Maybe these kooks are right. Maybe gluten is something that, you know, for most people is not a good thing to keep in the system. So that was kind of the start of my entry point into the paleo diet.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's also just simple for people to hear at home. If they, you know, if they need to kind of simplify things is, you know, meat, yeah. You know, you're talking produce, you're talking, you know, right. The fundamentals there. And now, so transitioning as well, right? So like, the orthodox old paleo, right? They were sort of almost dogmatic in not doing things like rice or not doing things like
totally.
Modifying it for keto or supplements as well. So speaking of supplements, I want to hit on a couple there. A mutual friend of ours, you know, Ryan Freisinger of Cosmic Animal, a great practitioner in his own right. I think I and he were toying with exogenous ketones at one time, and I believe he had said that he'd recommended some to you. Now, I had always held exogenous ketones to be an awesome way to put energy in the entire system without taxing the adrenal glands, right? It's sort of like a little baton that you put right in the handoff there in the electron transport chain, which for everyone at home, that's just nerd speak for your assembly line for manufacturing the energy you use from everything to thinking to muscle firing. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Is that something that you've used pre-workout? Cause I know you're a big, you know, strength and conditioning guy.
Okay. So I'll give an example. About a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years. Wow. It's been 2 years now. Anyway, I got talked into doing a 500 mile, five centuries back to back.
Oh, I saw that
road bike ride, in Oregon. In Bend, Oregon. And it's a kind of a funny story how this all came about. So the guy who he wanted an accountability partner. And I was looking at the guy and I'm like, well, I don't know exactly what he's talking about, but hey, I ride and I'm looking at this guy and he's not in that great of shape. So I was like, sure, no problem. I'll be your, you know, take a trip out to Oregon. This will be cool. And, kind of blew it off. Well, it's, I thought I didn't even have a road bike at the time. I mean, I was, you know, I ride fixed speed bikes and bikes and I do a lot of riding and road bikes, just wasn't my thing. But, you know, I thought, hey, I'll do anything once. And, if I like it, I'll do it twice. So anyway, got a road bike and, with the intent on, you know, at least getting a month's worth of training in before I, you know, I could kind of do the math. I'm like 100 miles a day in the mountains. That's going to be tough. So I better do some training. Anyway, one thing led to another. And I didn't train at all other than doing my normal fixed speed rides. So I thought, okay, well, at least I need to go out to Oregon and acclimate, you know, and kind of get used to this. So I show up to Bend like 3 days before this ride starts. And I'm like, okay, well, here's what we'll do. I'll do 30 miles today. And then the next day I'll do 60 and that will kind of break me in and I should be able to carry it forward from then. I got like 15 miles in the altitude in the mountains. And I was like dead the first day. I thought,
man,
yeah, this is going to suck. This is going to be really bad. Yeah. And I maybe got 20 the next. And let me just say, so anyway, so there's a couple things to learn from that. Number one, you don't have to be in really great shape to be a really good, just turning the cranks, one crank, one pedal turn, pedal turn, pedal turn, pedal turn. There is a different kind of endurance, right? And that endurance does not necessarily have to make you look like a Tour de France rider, right? So that was and I'm the strength and conditioning dude. I should have known that, and I didn't. That was a total humbling experience. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I made the ride, the 500 miles. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, and I've done some hard shit, but I was just too hard-headed to bail. And I had the opportunity to bail every day at every rest stop, which was every 20 miles. They'd have a shag van. Anybody need to go back? And I can tell you, there was a lot of times I was like, hell yes, take this bike and throw it off the side of the mountain and get me out of here. But it was a great bunch of people. They were like, dude, you don't want to do that. Just suck it up. And I rode in the back of the pack with grandma in the strollers and everything else. But I made it. All of that said is a roundabout way to say, how do I use exogenous ketones? I used exogenous ketones in that situation.
Because energy and endurance.
Yes, energy and endurance. I do keep them in my back pocket for these other instances. There are other times too when I am either situationally or I choose to fast for a while. I'll use exogenous ketones then because I'm really not, especially when it's circumstance, I'm really not too concerned about getting the quote unquote full benefits of fasting. I'm just trying to make it 24 hours because I just, for whatever reason, don't have time to eat.
Right.
And
right.
That happens quite a bit. I'm a busy guy and I don't put emphasis on food, right? If I put more emphasis on food, that probably wouldn't ever happen. But like today, I haven't eaten yet and I'm not really that hungry. And I worked out today. And as soon as we hang up here, I've got to go to a meeting and I'm not going to eat. I may eat tonight, but I do have a class tonight and I'm likely not going to eat until tomorrow morning. So in that instance, I may, if I feel so compelled, go for some exogenous ketones.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. It's always useful hearing that. And I know you got to go here in just several minutes. So I think one thing I did want to mention is that we hit on it before, but we didn't really circle back to, I think that another supplement a lot of people forget is actually kind of more of something you can get through food and also is good to supplement. And that's salt and electrolytes. Right. And, you know, you talked about the removal of salt. I've actually seen a lot of stuff where, a lot of research where, believe it or not, it's actually the inclusion of salt that helps calm down a lot of systems in the body.
Totally. You
know. So there is that. I think most people, if they're on a paleo ancestral diet, should quote unquote supplement with salt or use it as a supplemental food, putting it in, you know, some natural salt in every sort of jug of water that you drink. And then I think it's also a good idea to, supplement with electrolytes and even better if you could find, you know, mixtures of both of these things. So
totally. Let me tell you a story about salt real quick.
Go
real
for
quick
it. Yeah.
Story about salt. So, in the, how can I say, in the plant medicine world, there is a certain procedure that the Peruvian lineages do that's called dieta, right? And dieta kind of sets the body up, purifies the body to go into these experiences. Part of dieta is a complete removal of salt from the diet. And there's a lot of other aspects to it. The diet is very, very bland. It is the whole idea behind it is to, number one, purify the body. And number two, to put your mental energy on your spiritual endeavors. And that's basically the whole idea of dieta. There's some other ideas around it too, but those are the big ideas. The first time I went through a dieta and I completely removed salt from my diet, in about 6 hours, I felt like I had been run over by a truck. Mm. It is that pronounced and that fast. You just, and it makes sense, right? You just lose all of that mitochondrial energy, the biochemistry of mitochondrial energy. You've just taken that away. And you go for a week like that, you just feel like you're walking in quicksand the entire time. Your body is just sluggish. That is a pronounced removal of salt from the diet. And that is trying to get every last little bit of salt out of the diet, right? Now, the first time I went through that, I understood why salt was so prized in the old world. Because if your army had salt, that was the original performance enhancing drug.
Interesting.
After Dieta, when we reintroduced salt, it was like recharging the batteries. It was immediate. Just anybody out there, as an experiment, go for a few days with complete. It's probably, I don't know if it's a good idea. I don't know, but you can see how pronounced a low salt intake can be to the body and a low electrolyte intake. So conversely, if you want to talk about cheap supplements, I go through a lot of water in one day, pure water. And I add a pinch of Himalayan sea salt to every bottle. It's about 12 or 14 ounces, this bottle is. Every 12 to 14 ounce bottle of water gets a pinch of salt. That is how important it is to the human system.
Totally. That's exactly what I do too. And I think what the awesome thing about salt for everyone listening at home is you literally get real time feedback on it for your body. When you crave salt, that's actually a direct signal. It's not a mixed message. It's, oh, you need salt.
Totally.
So getting intuitive with the body, again, a whole nother layer in this health game.
Well, Keith, and here's another on the flip. I'll just add this before we go. On the flip, you just look at some online reports of like endurance athletes who have wrong-mindedly fueled their watered themselves with like RO water or completely purified water, devoid of any electrolyte, devoid of any salt or whatever. And it's just, for some group of athletes, there is a misnomer out there that pure water equates to water that has no mineral content, right? Mm-hmm. And these athletes will crash. And it's actually, there have been some medical emergencies and some cardiac arrests from these people because they just completely, what that does is it then you take in this water and then it even flushes out what you do have on board. So you're actually doing yourself a disservice by doing that. Now that's an extreme example, of course, but that is how important these substances are to the body. And they're very basic. I mean, it's electrolytes and salt. And for the most part, salt answers all the questions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see that being around a lot of MMA fighters who are weight cutting as well, in my private practice, everyone from everyday people to pro athletes. So I do see, these things manifest quite often.
Yes, totally.
I want to be, I really appreciate you coming on today. I want to be respectful of your time. Where can people, number one, find Primal Uprising, the book, highly recommend people check it out. And then also where are the best places to find paleo, all things paleo effects on social media and online?
Totally. So we'll start off with the book. The book you can find at www.paleofx.com/Primal Uprising. And that will take you right to the book. If you want to check out Paleo FX, just negate the Primal Uprising after the forward slash, and it'll take you right to Paleo FX. You can follow me at Theory on Instagram at Theory, the number 2, Practice. Theory to Practice was a kind of a brand and a blog I had for many, many years.
Amazing blog, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I have not, my interests have shifted kind of more so away from pure strength and conditioning out to other endeavors. And so, that blog right now, it hadn't been updated in a while. Still got a lot of great pieces in it. I'm kind of right now wondering what I am going to do with it because we do have this book out and there will be a blog that will come out soon. In support of the book, and I'm doing so much writing now in support of the book. Anyway, it's a long long way of saying I don't know what's going to become of that blog, but I am still very active on the that is my personal IG account is awesome. Theory to Practice. I also write at Substack, so that is www.substack.keithnorris.com. you can find me there for some of my more esoteric ramblings. What else? PaleoFX as an Instagram as well. PaleoFX on at PaleoFX on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook at PaleoFX. All the usual places. If you Google PaleoFX, you'll find us. Or if you Google Keith Norris, you'll find me.
Awesome. Highly recommend that. Highly recommend you guys check out the conference, both the virtual ones. You can actually watch past videos too, and live in-person ones when that's a thing again. Keith, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Maybe we can have you on again in the future sometime.
Coop, I would love it, man. I'm down to discuss anything with you, brother.
Sounds good, man. All right, everybody. We appreciate you tuning in and inviting us into your homes as always. This has been an awesome episode of BHB Radio. Until next time, this is Coach Coop. I will talk to you later.